Hey everyone, you're listening to Sip in Science, the podcast that accompanies the Oxford Science Cafe. The Science Cafe is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, and with this podcast, we are going back to our very first speakers who spoke at the Science Cafe all that time ago, and we are interviewing them as a part of this From the Archive series. Today, we offer the second interview, and our guest is Dr. Josh Gladden. He's the Vice Chancellor of Research at the University of Mississippi's Office of Research and Sponsored Programs. He's the spokesperson for Research and Sponsored Programs Division, which works to facilitate research and research funding, as well as providing support for all funded projects at the University of Mississippi. Dr. Josh Gladden holds a PhD degree in physics from the Pennsylvania State University, with a focus area on experimental condensed matter. Dr. Gladden gave the very first Science Cafe back in October of 2011, where he talked about how do airplanes fly and about turbulence. We might hear a little bit of that, but the main focus of today's conversation is how the Oxford Science Cafe has played a huge role in community development. He'll also talk about how the Science Cafe has served as an excellent avenue of public outreach for research being carried out at the university. So, without further ado, let's dive right into it. Dr. Josh Gladden, it's great to have you here with us today. Welcome to Sip in Science.
Well, Sumit, I'm thrilled to be here. This is an exciting podcast series you guys are doing.
Awesome.
So thank you.
We're approaching the 10-year anniversary of the Oxford Science Cafe, and you were its first ever speaker. So how does it feel hearing that? Has it been a long time? Does it feel like yesterday?
Gosh, it does feel like yesterday. It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years. But I do remember that well. I think it was just a great idea that Dr. Cavaglia had. He had a great sense of reaching out to the community and engaging the community and letting them, you know, sort of know all the great research that's happening here at the university, but also kind of the wider world of science and discovery. And 10 years later, it's still going.
When you were first asked to give the talk, what was on your mind? Had you given such an informal talk before?
I've taught at lots of different levels. I don't know at that time if I had given a talk quite like that, that was just to adults and interested community members. That was a little nerve-wracking to kind of figure out the right balance. You know, how sophisticated are they going to be? Do I put any math in there? Probably not. You know, those sorts of decisions. And also what topic would be interesting to people. I didn't want to go too much into my personal research because there would have to be so much to get everybody up to speed to understand what my personal research goals were. But I do remember talking about how airplanes fly and the physics behind that. And so I really, I thought, well, you know, most people will probably be at least interested in the physics behind airplane flight. So I seem to remember it going over pretty well and getting some good questions.
That's awesome. Did you have any expectations in terms of the audience since it was the first cafe?
Well, you know, I didn't, and nobody had any idea who the audience would be. And so I kind of assumed, based on, you know, discussions with Marco, that it would be you know, mostly adults, just general community members. You know, and also part of this is the marketing and who you're getting the word out to and trying to drum up interest. Which he was pretty good at. And then Lucy's Bakery, I think. Yeah. And so everybody was crowded around and they had coffee and pastries, and it was, the layout was a little strange because it wasn't, you know, people were sort of, just pulling up chairs everywhere. And yeah, but it was fun.
In terms of value, what did you think the Oxford Science Cafe was offering to the community in Oxford that maybe was missing before?
Well, I think this is one of the great benefits of living in a college town, right? Is that you get access to all these sort of interesting resources and people and activities. We have a lot on the arts front and performances and things like that, but we didn't have so much on the science front. And so I thought this was a great opportunity for us to kind of highlight some of the science we were that was going on campus. And you know, I think Marco had a great vision that, you know, you could take sort of basic concepts like airplane flight, and there's no sort of new cutting edge physics there. We know that physics. But most people don't really understand how that works, and yet they trust their lives to that physics all the time when they jump on a plane. And so all the way up to cutting edge things, you know, this year, COVID, of course, was a huge topic of interest, and everybody was interested in trying to understand better, you know, the science around the virology and all that.
It's really interesting to hear, because we came here in 2017, and we were just wondering, like, how Oxford was back then, and have you seen it change in terms of having science engagement?
We are doing more over the years, over the last 10 years, and probably going back a little further than that, on trying to create these opportunities for the community to engage with our science and our research. You know, you guys know we do the Halloween demo show, and we invite kids in and dress up and decorate and everything. But one of the highlights of that is the demonstration show, because those are always just fun, and you can really surprise people, and you can get their attention and entertain them and teach them at the same time, which is really great. And so, you know, doing more of those kinds of things are important. And that brings value to the community, that people come and they enjoy themselves and they appreciate the university more. And so that's all a good thing.
Indeed. And especially as the vice chancellor for research at the university today, how important do you think it's for even researchers, whether you're a faculty or a grad student, to, you know, step out of your lab?
Yeah, you know, it's increasingly important. And I'll say this as the vice chancellor. It's not only us. I mean, it's important for us, and we've been trying to do a better job over the last, you know, 5 years or so on kind of communicating out to the general public. Part of that is to, you know, engender some pride and some recognition in the flagship university of the state and the alumni base and all of that. So I think it's increasingly important for us to kind of communicate out, you know, what the impact of that research is on our not just in our state, but in the region and the world. You know, there is impactful research going on here, and we need to let everybody know about it. The other part of that, though, is that the federal agencies are increasingly focused on trying to better communicate all the good work that they are funding, that the taxpayers are funding. Better communicate that out to the general public, who are the taxpayers. Your job, your future jobs, as professional scientists, is not just the work, and the work is of course the critical part, but to be able to effectively communicate that work out, not just to your colleagues and other experts, but to the layperson on the street, and that's a good exercise in helping you as a scientist really understand your work.
In terms of how the audience of the Oxford Science Cafe, do you think that will encourage maybe more people from areas, not just Oxford, but around, you know, maybe around a 100-mile radius even, to apply to the University of Mississippi and maybe consider studying
sure.
there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that anytime you can spark someone's interest, whether it's around research or the arts or, you know, athletics too. I mean, that sparks a lot of people's interest. But all of those kinds of outwardly facing activities, like Science Cafe, you know, everybody has different interests. So you don't want to just sort of, you know, have all of your outwardly facing activities in one narrow area, because there's a lot of people that aren't in that area. They're never going to be interested by that. And so anytime we can kind of broaden out those activities that help kind of tell our story and spark interest and inspire people, that helps the university. But even beyond that, and of course we're always interested in recruiting new students, but even beyond that, even if those kids don't go here, but that talk, and it triggered something in their mind, they're in eighth grade or, you know, whatever, and it triggers something in their mind that oh my gosh, you know, scientists aren't just what I see in the movies, right? Because mostly that's where the general public sort of, you know, gets exposed to scientists, and we all know that's nothing like what science is actually. That these are just real people, you know, they work very hard, but they do really interesting things. And so if that sparks that child to go on and decide to become a physics major, a chemistry major, biology, or, you know, whatever it might be, I mean, that's a great thing too for society.
And it really removes the impressions that you have to be a genius. You can study crickets in Hawaii, or, you know, you can go, if you're working on, like, say, microplastics or something like that, you can, the work can involve kayaking in the Mississippi River to collect samples and things like that. And these are the things people get to see.
Yeah, and I think is really an important point, that it sort of removes some stereotypes that people have about what a career in science is. It's sort of 90% hard work and 10% talent, right? I mean, it's just, and that means that, you know, most people, they can pursue that. It's within their grasp. You don't have to be a genius. You do have to be willing to work hard, but if it's something you're passionate about, that's not really work, right? And so, I love that, you know, that aspect of it. You know, on the fun side, one of the most fun things I was able to do is spend a summer in Germany working with a collaborator over there in my particular area, which is materials research and phase transitions and things like that. And he invited me over to come work in his lab, which was a national lab in Germany. And so, you know, I got to spend a summer in Germany with my family, and that was just a great experience. I mean, partly because, you know, it's always great to go work in somebody else's lab, because you learn new things, you learn new techniques, you meet new people, and that's all valuable. And but then also just being in a different country and exploring that culture and history was great. So that was definitely on the fun side. My work has periodically taken me to some of the larger national labs, you know, Los Alamos National Lab, Oak Ridge, you know, places like that. And that's always fun and exciting for me to see these sort of massive organizations and the infrastructure and the resources and the people, you know, all working on some aspect of science. And it's just a lot of energy, and it's just it's exciting to be part of that.
So coming back to the cafe, now I know it's been 10 years and you might not have crystal clear memories. Like, I don't know what I was doing 10 years ago. But if I were to place you back in that setting, turn back the clock, what would you be excited to talk about?
Oh, if I were going to talk about something different?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think what if I were to do it again, I would like to focus on, I mean, my particular area is materials, and I would like to focus on energy-related materials, so energy conversion materials. I think increasingly, you know, we're going to, our energy portfolio is going to need to change. And so I think that there is a strong, that materials research will play a strong role in that, because we need better, more efficient ways to convert, whether it's light into electricity or waste heat into electricity, or even acoustics, acoustic waves into electricity. You know, that materials play an important role in that conversion. And so I would probably want to focus on kind of giving everybody kind of up to speed on where we are, what the materials are, what the problems are with those materials, you know, superconductors, for instance. You know, so there's a lot of things you could talk about there, and it's very relevant to our energy needs today.
That was Dr. Josh Gladden, the Vice Chancellor for Research at the University of Mississippi. This episode was edited by Shubhayu Bakchi. Be sure to subscribe to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you're tuning into right now. You can also follow us on social media. On Instagram, we are Sippin' Science, with an underscore between Sippin' and Science. On Twitter, you can follow us at UM Science Cafe, or like us on Facebook at the Oxford Science Cafe. We'll be posting updates, pictures, and notifications about new podcast episodes over there. The Oxford Science Cafe features monthly talks and conversations about science for the local community here in Oxford, Mississippi. We are sponsored by the University of Mississippi Office of the Provost, the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and the UM Women in Physics. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.